Hey everyone, I'm Swati Rawat and welcome to the Visionary Podcast, where I talk to visionary Indian women with inspiring, intriguing and aspirational stories. In episode 31, our visionary is Nikita Vadva, Program Coordinator at Collective Impact Partnership. Backed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Collective Impact Partnership is a program initiated by five organizations working towards women's rights, health, and leadership. It is supporting 22 women leaders in Maharashtra with their social initiatives and believes in unleashing the power of collective impact by empowering and upskilling women leaders at the grassroots level. Tune in as Nikita talks about CIP's multiple initiatives and how it is impacting the lives of these women leaders.
And just to start with, I grew up in New Delhi. I've lived here pretty much all of my life. My life has been a lot of Delhi, Bombay, Delhi. So that's where I grew up. And I think that, you know, I've been very privileged to be a part of a lot of women-only spaces. So I studied part of my life in an all-girls school. Then I had the privilege of going to Lady Shriram College for Women. Then I did my master's in social work at TIS, specializing in women-centered practice. So basically, I grew up with a very fair sense of the world, and I had a lot of inspirational, ambitious women around me. And, you know, I felt that women could achieve anything when, you know, we grew up and we entered the workforce. And I think entering the workforce was a little bit of a rude shock for me, because I started my work in a consulting space, and then I spent some time in advertising spaces. And just felt that there was a general disparity in terms of like the number of women and men I'd see in a room, and especially people in leadership roles. That affected me a lot, because considering, you know, when you're joining the workforce, I was looking for people who could be role models to me. There were very few women I saw in middle management, higher up. And then, you know, even fewer women who'd be willing to sort of step out of their way and mentor you, because it's hard, like being in a leadership role. In a competitive environment. It was just very unsettling. I didn't see the world as fair as I saw it when I grew up. So that really hit me really hard at that point. The other thing that shocked me was when I discovered around the same time that, you know, the female labor force participation in India is on a decline. Over the past 10 years, it's actually gone down. And, you know, when we think about and when we like, you know, the environment we see, and we're seeing more women reach higher educational attainment. There are more women around us that we see from, you know, as compared to previous generations who found their way in the workforce. And you know, I was seeing this, but the stats weren't adding up. It just kind of was quite a conundrum. And that really hit me. Like, what is it? Why are lesser women joining the workforce at a time now when we're talking about, like, 10 years ago, we were talking about India shining and the GDP being highest growth rate in the world, you know, and then at that point, hearing that more women were choosing to stay out of the workforce was sort of unsettling. Like, that's when I decided to do my master's in women-centered practice in social work, to sort of understand, like, why is that conundrum? Why does that paradox exist? And actually, I was surprised even more, because that sort of gave me a glimpse of this India that I hadn't really seen before. And I'm really grateful for that experience. Because honestly, I was very limited. Like, in my perspective, it was pretty limited to like urban city, metro city life. And just going out there and, you know, understanding that spaces aren't as hunky-dory as you see them. In rural spaces, I was exposed to the, I saw that, you know, women put in so much labor force, like in agriculture, like I saw so many women working really hard. So again, that was really surprising that, you know, again, like, you know, you see all these women working really hard, they're spending so much time on the field, but still are counted as informal labor and are not necessarily deriving fair incomes for the kind of work they're putting in. The other rude shock was to see the fact that, you know, just that realization when it hit me that, you know, when you're at when I'm at home, I see that, you know, I saw that a lot of cooking was taken care of by the women in the house. a lot of sewing, stitching, the home, the housework was taken care of by the women.
Yeah.
But when you step out, like, you know, you see like tailors, a regular tailor usually is a male, you know. And when you see kitchen staff, when you see people doing like chef jobs, you know, that's when it really hit me that there's definitely something that's not adding up in the way that like women's work is perceived and how women's work is compensated for. And, you know, how much are we willing to involve it to say that this is like a nation building activity? It adds up to something, you know, that that sustains this country, that sustains the world.
Yeah.
So that conundrum really from my childhood to like doing my master's has been something, has been a theme that I've sort of explored a lot more. And I'm trying to like sort of make my peace with it and also try to work towards understanding and working towards issues that can sort of change that.
And Nikita, how old were you when you sort of were in the consulting in your advertising space, when you had explored that and, you know, when this shock and almost like this reality hit you and you decided to pursue your master's? How old were you at that time?
When I started working, I was 21, right out of college.
Yeah.
And then I was working till I was about 24. And I mean, by through those years, I had almost figured out, okay, like, you know, this is not the space that's making most sense for me. These are not the kind of real world problems I want to be solving. So around the age of 24, I decided to sort of do my master's and figure out, like, what is this dissonance in this world that I'm seeing and not adding up?
So Nikita, let's talk about the present. Can you tell me in the audience what Collective Impact Partnership is and what's your role within the organization?
So the Collective Impact Partnership is basically it's a project. It's a collaboration between five organizations that are based in the US. They're nonprofits. So the five organizations work on separate areas of intervention. And, you know, they're implementing the CIP project together.
Okay.
The insight it's based on is that multiple interventions together with the same set of people can potentially produce results that build off one another.
Okay.
So, you know, usually all these organizations are doing separate work with the same set of people. For example, Rise Up works with advocacy. It builds women leaders and actually male leaders' capacity to do advocacy within their local environments. Global Fund for Women does grant making for economic justice. How Women Lead does leadership programs for women leaders and coaching modules. WorldPulse is an online platform for women. And PHI sort of does general operating support. But they were all involved in separately, you know, intervening in the same people's lives. So they decided to come together and implement this project. It's honestly, it's an experiment where we started in 2018 in Maharashtra. That was our space of intervention. And it's been an experiment that has done well. So we're very excited about like scaling it and talking about it and taking it out to the world to see if more can be, you know, there are more spaces for collaboration that are possible within the nonprofit and CSO sector.
And what does it do exactly? What is this experiment like? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
So what we're trying to do is we're building up women leaders from the grassroots. We're building up their leadership and advocacy capacity. So we believe that women leaders are the best suited to find solutions for the problems that exist in their own local context.
Okay.
What we aim to do and what we are trying to do is build up their capacity through training, through coaching, through technical assistance. To be able to advocate and change the systems that are holding them back. And we're focused on economic empowerment. So it's not like the usual idea of economic empowerment where we're saying that, you know, like we're looking at more income generation, although that is a great long-term outcome that we're looking at. But the idea is to actually make systemic changes and large-scale changes that affect a lot more women than just a few in terms of their personal lives, but also like a community of women and systems that sort of like, you know, hold them back or there are systemic challenges so that women can directly address these challenges and create a more level playing field for themselves and other women in the community.
And who are these women, Nikita? Like, how do you choose these women? Are these the ones who come from marginalized spaces? Are these urban dwellers? I'm just trying to understand, like, how does Collective Impact Partnership go about, like, picking a woman and, you know, helping them out in their journey?
So, so far, what we've worked on is we have been looking for women leaders who are already established in their communities.
Okay.
And are looking for that level of support who, you know, when taking them to the state or national level will create a bigger impact.
Okay.
Where training them on certain capacities, helping them build their organization in a certain way will, like, jumpstart, you know, the next level of their work. So they're already reasonably well-established women in their communities. We've had a great cohort. We started with about 22 women in Maharashtra from across 22 different districts in the state. And so some of them are based in, like, urban areas like Mumbai, Pune, Nagpur.
Yeah.
But a majority of them are actually based in rural areas. So they're you know, from Dioni, Latur, Kolhapur, Solapur. So across the state. And you know, in the age range has been amazing too. Our youngest was about 24 years old and the oldest is somewhere in her 60s. So she's pretty well established. The 24-year-old, she's starting out.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's been a lot of cross-learning in that way within the cohort as well.
Yeah, yeah. And if you can also elaborate a little bit, Nikita, actually, this sounds really interesting to me. So I'm just, my head is filled with a lot of questions that are popping up. Could you also elaborate on what exactly is the help that you provide? Like, is it mentorship? Is it financial help in terms of expanding or starting their own enterprise or turning their idea into a business? Or is it a more of a networking help where you help them connect with the right people that can sort of help lead them through their work or help them in the personal journey?
I think that what's exciting about this project specifically is exactly the fact that these are five organizations that do five different things, right? So for example, like Global Fund is a grant-making organization, whereas Rise Up focuses on advocacy training. So they all sort of clubbed, our, you know, areas and of strength together to create this program. So what we do is we've created a journey where we do advocacy skill building. So we help, you know, women leaders who already have ideas about, you know, laws and policies that they want to change within the system, within their state, within the country that will make a difference to a larger set of women. So we help them build an advocacy project. Then we help them, then we do like a leadership training module. So they build their personal leadership and are, you know, most of the time able to apply that in their organizations and build up organizational leadership as well. And apart from that, we fund them. This was competitive funding. So out of, you know, there were 13 projects that came up. Actually, sorry, 16 projects that came up from this cohort of 22 women on advocacy, on in terms of laws and policies that they wanted to work on, implementation of laws and policies that affect women in their communities. And we granted to about 10 of these organizations. And so for the past 2 years, they have been working on these projects in their communities, and we've been supporting them through technical assistance. Then we've helped them, like, sort of build a network, reach out to other people who would make sense to support this kind of intervention in their communities, and other general grant making support as well. Additionally, I think one other cool thing about the project is that there's also a digital component, which comes from, like, WorldPulse. So, you know, like, as I shared, this cohort is quite diverse in terms of where they come from. And, you know, some of them have had digital access, some of them have not. So in terms of, like, building that up, like building their ability to tell stories online, to advocate for themselves, use the WorldPulse platform that sort of allows them to connect with women leaders across the world. That's been another thing that we've been able to, you know, help them with on their journey.
I'm also interested in knowing, Nikita, what are some of the programs which you spearheaded? You know, can you share a couple of stories of the impact that they had on the lives of these women?
For sure, that would be my pleasure, because honestly, working with these women has been an incredibly inspiring experience. When you think about, you know, what is possible, you know, when one woman, you know, and honestly, where some of these leaders come from, they have thrived despite the system and not like, you know, haven't had the kind of support that even is available to some of us in different ways. They've thrived beyond that. So it's been an incredibly inspiring and humbling experience to sort of work with them and help them through their project in whatever capacity that I have been able to. So like, for example, out of the 10 projects, right, that we're funding currently, quite a few, majority are based on women in agriculture. And this has been a really interesting space because, you know, the recognition of the fact that actually there's a trend of feminization happening in Indian agriculture, you know, where due to various reasons, like either men are migrating more or like women are just employed as family labor within the farms that they work on. They don't necessarily have decision making in terms of, you know, their farm, what they're cultivating, how they're making decisions in terms of what to grow, when to grow. And the other challenge is that they don't have access and like they don't have access to ownership. They don't own that land. They don't have asset ownership. They do not have access to government subsidies and credits to be able to make those decisions better. So in many cases, like they're doing all the work, but they don't have decision making. And this is one thing that the women and some of these projects have worked on very strongly. What they are trying to do with this process is that bring more recognition to women farmers. So, you know, usually farmer is seen as the person who owns the land, which is usually the oldest male in the family in joint property setups. So the recognition that, you know, women are farmers, women are putting in like 60 to even more, 60 is a conservative figure, percentage of the labor. So they need to be recognized by government schemes and entitlements so that they can get access to input subsidies and credits. And implement those within, you know, their farmland and their areas. That's been something that the projects have been working on pretty strongly. In terms of the impact, this is a long-term project, to be honest. So just like in the past 2 years, we've seen a lot of movement in the way that women farmers have collectivized. They've like about one project has been able to reach out to about 10,000 women to collectivize them into women farmer groups so that they're able to be organized and approach the government and, you know, get their names recognized on schemes and subsidies where they can directly approach and get an entitlement versus going through their family. The long-term impact of this that we're hoping to achieve is that more women farmers will directly be able to make decisions on their farm, have, you know, control of the income that's coming through, you know, that's coming to their family, as well as have property ownership so that they're not seen as external factors, you know, who are external people or just labor who's contributing to that field, but have actual ownership of the land they're cultivating. But, you know, change honestly in the grassroots, and actually I think change is a slow process, and 2 years is a very limited time to, you know, say that, you know, we'd actually change like laws and policies and have them impact people. So we're on our way in terms of this process. Let's see where that goes. The other project I really want to share with you that has been super interesting to me, also in terms of women's economic empowerment, has been the focus on like waste picker women. So, you know, according to the Solid Waste Management Act from 2016, women who, you know, get their livelihood of, you know, collecting garbage and waste from people's homes, they usually segregate it. And that's their livelihood. They sell it, you know, to trash collectors and then make a livelihood. And it's absolutely minimal and usually like a caste-based profession. So, you know, the women who are in this space, you know, tend to come from a marginalized space. So like one project has taken this very seriously that, you know, we have to implement what's in the law. And the law states that these women should, there needs to be a plan that they need to be employed in municipalities. For waste segregation work and should be given a fee for doing their work, actually a wage from the municipal corporation. So like a project in Kolhapur, they're working with three district municipalities to be able to bring more dignity to this kind of work and in the process of getting fair pay for the women waste pickers.
Hmm.
So in these three districts, the women, there have been about 2,000 women who have received identification cards from the municipality at this point.
Okay.
They're employed in waste segregation. They have uniforms from the municipality. And if you like talk to them and if you meet them, it's pretty great to see how the dignity that they see in their labor has changed.
Hmm.
Like they recognize themselves as like, you know, women who are earning and women who are in formal employment.
Yeah.
And are making a difference. So just in terms of, you know, taking things that are government responsibility and making sure that government is acting up on their commitment has been also a huge impact from a project like this.
Yeah. And Nikita, I mean, listening to all the amazing work that you've done, I'm just, I want to touch upon and sort of get your views on what has happened and how has COVID disrupted CIP's grassroots initiatives? Because women have been hit quite hard under this pandemic, be it terms of employment, be it terms of education. What is the stuff that you are seeing under your initiatives that you're running? And what are some of the challenges CIP is facing during this pandemic?
Definitely. So the pandemic obviously hit grassroots initiatives pretty hard because of two reasons mainly, especially the projects we're working on. One is that, you know, meetings with community members were severely halted. So, you know, projects needed to be put on standstill.
Yeah.
The second thing was decision makers' attention. A lot of projects were working with decision makers to move along policy agendas. But, you know, decision maker attention got severely diverted, and rightly so, to respond to like the crisis immediately. So that hit us reasonably hard and we had to take a pause. So what we did in this time was we created a space of collaboration where these leaders across the 22 districts, and they're working across say 30 districts out of the 36 in Maharashtra. So, you know, we started getting together every week and maybe every 2 weeks on Zoom calls to sort of talk about how this was impacting women in their communities. And we started to notice a trend that, you know, some of the issues across communities for women that were standing out for the leaders were very similar. So the ones that stood out were that there were an increased number of school dropouts, which were disproportionately affecting girls. The second one was that there was an increased number of child and early marriages happening in the community. The third one was definitely the largest impact was the loss of livelihood and access to income and food supplies that the women were facing. And then another one we identified was that there was a lack of access to healthcare for non-COVID related diseases. So like for pregnant women, access to hospitals had become almost negligible. So there was a sense of increased sense of like there was increased deliveries at home happening. So these were the issues we sort of identified as like, you know, common issues that was, you know, showing up for women across the state. So the leaders themselves, like we supported them to do this, but they decided to draft a demand charter to the state of Maharashtra, talking about these issues and what kind of interventions they needed the state to make for them to be able to do their jobs in the community better. They drafted a demands charter and they sent it to the state of the chief minister's office and the deputy chairman of the Maharashtra Legislative Council, who is Dr. Neelam Gore. And we had a really good response from her. She's an advocate for women's rights. So we had a few meetings with her. We were able to lay out the issues. And, you know, one thing that she definitely promised and she's delivered on was that she connected us to the right decision makers in those local areas who were, you know, who the leaders were able to talk to and create more awareness around these issues and find solutions in their spaces. The other thing that happened was she passed, she made sure that this government resolution in the state of Maharashtra was passed, that, you know, Gram Sabhas, where a lot of these issues get recorded locally and women's issues get recorded into the you know, Gram Panchayat development plan for the next year, that these definitely happen. And, you know, women's voices are very strongly recorded and brought into the system, even though people were not meeting physically. And that was a huge challenge because usually, you know, people have to fight to make sure that they're in the Gram Sabha, that their voice is heard. And since the pandemic, like the idea was that they were not going to have any physical meetings. So these issues that women face, the one opportunity for these issues to get recorded would also not be available. So she passed that government resolution. And in many cases, the leaders across the state were able to make them happen and make sure that the women's issues and these issues of you know, child marriage, where they were happening, they yeah. were able to bring that to the attention of the local authority
yeah.
and deal with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess the idea was during COVID that we shifted gears. We pivoted in a way that what, you know, we work with women and our focus remains on working on women's issues. And it's the same women when we're working for them and their economic empowerment. If they're hit in different ways at this point, what can we do in terms of, you know, reaching out to decision makers and law and policy to make their lives better, even when it's not exactly the agenda we started with over 2 years ago.
Yeah. And Nikita, personally, just your point of view, do you think it's going to be much harder on the macro level of the sort of impact that you were building amongst these groups and amongst and for women? Because do you feel that it's almost like one step forward, two steps back because of what happened as a result of this pandemic?
You know, I'm really hopeful that, you know, the COVID pandemic has definitely presented a challenge, but it's also created a lot of opportunities, I believe. The way that women have been able to come online, still connect and get their work done, you know, regardless of whether they were meeting physically, which was the primary way of engaging with decision makers and you know, making sure that things happened. That changed because, you know, there wasn't such a huge uptake of digital technology before the pandemic. And I feel like during this pandemic, the way the leaders, especially some women, you know, who are older from rural areas and they were not using the internet so much, the way that they've, you know, incorporated Zoom calls, you know, making meetings happen with, you know, state ministers on Zoom and making sure that, you know, they get things done. I think that's been a huge positive change that's come out of the pandemic. So hopefully there are new ways of working and approaching the same problems that have emerged. I genuinely believe that, you know, change is a slow process. And when we're working on such large scale, you know, problems and challenges that affect, you know, literally an entire community, an entire state, an entire country, like, you know, property ownership is a huge issue across the country. Those kind of agendas, shifting them anyway, takes a lot of time. So we were, you know, we're not tied to the idea that these problems have to be solved in a certain amount of time. What the kind of base work that the leaders were able to do in the first year and the first 18 months of implementation was to create a stronghold within the community to make sure that the community members recognized what the needs were, what, you know, what their legal rights and entitlements were, and work, and they worked with systems. They made inroads with, you know, decision makers to talk about, you know, how the system needs to be more responsive to what women really want. So I feel like that build up, you know, the leaders were very effectively able to shift it into like, what are the immediate needs of women now?
Yeah.
And if this is the groundwork that we've already done, how can we use it to make women's lives better? So I actually feel like I'm pretty hopeful that, you know, in terms of how things will pivot, I think we're looking at a new world. And I feel like there's been a lot more connection that even leaders have found with national and international platforms through this time. Because they've been using the internet more. So I'm actually pretty hopeful that, you know, it's only moving forward, really, if you think about it in the big picture.
Nikita, thank you so much. I mean, it's been a great conversation. And I would like to end it with just one last question, where I just want to understand in this gloomy times that we're living in right now, what are some of the personal and professional goals that you're setting up for yourself for the future?
Okay, that's a big question. But I'll try my best to answer that. In terms of like my professional goals, I feel like the past 3 years with this kind of work and, you know, working directly with grassroots initiatives has been incredibly inspiring. And in whatever way I have been able to support the projects has been a huge learning for me as well, that I've been able to, you know, build up resources, technical assistance for these projects, and I hope to continue to be able to do so. We're currently looking at if, you know, there is space to expand this project across the country and to more states. So that's definitely something we're exploring. We're currently conducting a survey to understand capacities that, you know, organizations working on women's economic empowerment have across the country. And hopefully we'll be able to build a bigger, larger project where more women's voices and more women's organizations can be included. So definitely that's something I want to keep working on. You know, personally, I feel like I want to also live my life in a way that's aligned with that. I genuinely want to be a women's rights advocate in whatever way, in the way I live my life, as well as in the kind of work I do. You know how I heard this quote one time, which says that I am not free while any woman is unfree, even when her shackles are very different from mine. So that really holds true for me. Like, I just feel like in terms of, you know, how I saw the world when I was growing up, that it's a fair world. Women can achieve anything. The system is inclusive. You know, the system is responsive to including more women in the spaces that I'd like to see more women at.
Yeah.
I just hope to be able to keep building on that and raising my voice wherever possible and sort of addressing any inequality that I can see. And hopefully I'm able to do that more.
Thanks for listening in, and please subscribe to the show to catch the next episode. You can follow us on Instagram to stay in touch and get all the updates. Our Instagram handle is vision.nari. That's vision.nari. If you know a visionary that I should feature on this podcast, write to me at thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. That's thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. This podcast is produced by Launchora, a storytelling and creative learning platform. Theme music is created by Diala Swain. She's a uniquely talented music producer from New Zealand. Do check out her music on SoundCloud or follow the link in the description. I'll see you guys soon with a new visionary. Have a great day.